go to the grassroots level with our own CSR teams, and we ensure that, you know, it's a 360 degree change that happens in the life of every, you know, person that we touch.
It was designed in India, for India, by India. Because there is something in India that we cherish about public service, about doing public good.
Yes.
When I see the tribal women we work with, using the skills they learn to financially empower themselves, then we know that change is afoot. We all have a responsibility to our societies, and it is the social contract of the modern civilization, and whether it is towards environment or towards the people, we must fulfill that.
Thank you for joining us on the Steel of India podcast. We're back. And I say we're back because this is season two. I'm your host, Sheetal. And on season two, we're once again going to open the doors to lots of conversations, all of them having one thing in common. They're all anchored in steel. We're going to talk about the social change that the industry has been driving, especially in organizations like Jindal Steel. We're also going to talk about the transformation in the industry that's being led by technology, by the talent and skilling needs of the sector, and indeed its commitment to sustainability. Now, in this very first episode of season two of Steel of India, the podcast, we're going to discuss what it means to be caring beyond bounds. It's a very powerful phrase. We're going to unpack what it means to lead with purpose and also deliver social change at scale. Very important in a country like ours. So let me tell you who's going to be leading the conversation. We've got with us Mrs. Shalu Jindal. She is a leader whose impact, no pun intended, spans several different domains. She's, of course, here in her capacity today as chairperson of the Jindal Foundation. But she's a lot more than that. Many hats is what she wears. She's also the Chancellor of the OP Jindal University, Raigad. She's also formerly the chairperson of National Bal Bhavan. She's also the Vice President of the Flag Foundation of India and a dancer par excellence in Kuchipudi. What a lovely art form that is. Meaningful legacy. That is what she really stands for. And it is under her leadership that the foundation, the Jindal Foundation, has seen several different accolades come its way. And she herself most recently was honored with the 2025 Edelgave Hurun India Impact Philanthropist of the Year Award. So we are lucky to have her on our side for this very first conversation. We want to be looking at the broader picture. We want to look at CSR from a wider lens. We want to ask questions like, why was it built? Or what did it aim to do? And we decided, oh, then we need a very, very key voice, a voice that was instrumental in shaping India's CSR thinking, all that we understand about social impact in this country today. And so we said, who can that voice belong to? The answer to that is Dr. Bhaskar Chatterjee. He's a former IAS officer, and he's certainly someone who's been instrumental in shaping corporate and, I would say, India's CSR framework. So thank you so much, Dr. Chatterjee, for joining us today, and Shaluji for agreeing to get together on this podcast, the kickoff of season two, I should say, and help us understand what caring beyond bounds really means. Great to have you here.
Thank you.
Yeah. And, you know, Shaluji, I have to start with you. You know, I referred to that whole numbers wala game. You're talking about spend, you're talking about budget, Excel sheet, and this and that. And that's usually the context people use to refer to CSR. But then that's not the full story, right? The story of CSR is something else altogether. Do tell us.
So the idea of CSR was completely about helping the people, and that gets lost in the mandatory requirements. Corporate social responsibility, let's leave the corporate word out. We all have a responsibility to our societies, and it is the social contract of the modern civilization. And whether it is towards environment or towards the people, we must fulfill that. Companies often may feel an obligation of giving a percentage of their profit, but I think it's more than obligation. It is a responsibility that we have to our societies.
Right. And when you talk about responsibility to our societies, Shaluji, impact becomes very important. You know, we feel responsible for society. We do something and then we need to measure impact. So when you walk into a community that is being served by Jindal Foundation, what makes you go say, that there is real change happening? What makes you say that?
So when I see the tribal women we work with, using the skills they learn to financially empower themselves, then we know that change is afoot. When I see more than 10,000 young lives ready to take up the challenges of everyday life through education and skill development, then I know that things are slowly but steadily changing. I would like to mention that among the various activities that we do, sports with the tribal children is a major initiative. Sports, just like music and art, has the power to bring us together, build community, and remind us of our common humanity.
Well, I want to come to you, Dr. Chatterjee, and this is where we bring out our, you know, wide-angle lens, because it's very important, especially for people who are considering careers in CSR, to understand the history of the CSR framework. And India, as we know, has institutionalized social impact by setting up a CSR framework. Why did the country choose to go down that path and what was it hoping to achieve?
If you go back to the initial years when we were actually trying to think of a framework for CSR, in India, we actually brought it into the public sector first. And my concept when I was secretary in the public sector enterprises department was to try and see whether all of the public sector first came into the CSR space before we took it to the private sector.
Right.
Now, in the public sector, we first brought the CSR guidelines in 2010, 4 years before the private sector.
Right.
And the idea there was to give companies an opportunity, because most of public sector works in the really remote areas, whether it's SAIL, whether it's NTPC, whether it's any one of the big Maharatnas or Navaratnas. So what is the obligation that public sector owes to the communities, many of whom they're actually displaced, where factories have come up, so many tribal communities affected by what they do? So is there an obligation for them towards those communities, to those societies?
Right.
So the origin of that CSR concept was this, that in discharging those obligations, what should we do? You spoke also about numbers, and in some ways, numbers are important.
Right.
If you say to an organization, please do CSR, and they say, oh, we're already doing it, right? So what is it that you want us to do? And therefore, you need to say that you must do at least so much. If you do more, that's fine. You need to have a framework by which you do that. You need to report on what you are doing. You can't say that I'm doing a lot of good, but I feel shy about reporting it. Unless it's out in the public domain, unless it is subject to public scrutiny, unless there is somebody looking at what you are saying, right? Then only it becomes meaningful and credible.
Right.
And that, in a sense, was the idea of bringing CSR
in. Fantastic. And today, it's integral to, it's a conversation that's being had at the level of boards. And who would have thought that that's the journey that we will take? But to come back to you, you know, Shaluji, you gave us a story of the tribal woman. And when you look at her and you see agency, right, that's a very powerful word. Access, that's another one. We are trying to break down barriers to access. But above all this, I think more important is the dignity with which people are given the kind of support that you talk about. How does a foundation weave in dignity into all that it does?
So, you know, we all know that everyone deserves equal access. But how does one give dignity and agency to those who are on the margins of our society?
Right.
At Jindal Foundation, the approach is not just about providing opportunities, but creating an environment that allows them to live with respect and thereby contribute to a just and equitable society.
Right. Yeah. And generational wealth, right? Shaluji, you have spoken about that as well, as very important, capability building as wealth. How does generational wealth or helping someone gain that actually help make a change?
So just like Jindal Foundation focuses has been on education, skilling, health and nutrition, clean water, sanitation, sustainable livelihoods, women empowerment, environment and agriculture, rural development, sports, art and culture, social inclusion. Okay. I mean, the list goes on. But these are the main pillars of a just society. Right. And it should be obvious to use the generational wealth to strengthen these pillars. The Jindal Foundation has been around for 28 years, impacting 14.6 million lives, spending over 2,000 crores till date.
Wow, that is quite a number that you've given us. Although I said numbers aren't important, that number is most certainly like music to my ears. But to come back to you, Dr. Chatterjee, you know, you spoke about how the efforts need to stand up to public scrutiny, and that's where numbers come into the picture. Sure. And I'm sure by now you can very easily tell what is a serious CSR effort and what's surface level. So what sets companies that treat CSR as a checkbox effort apart from those that manage to actually deliver some real on-ground value?
I think it comes from what we just spoke about. I mean, what is in the tradition, in the way the company has evolved? Have they had a legacy of public service before? And many of them did. Some of the brightest and best companies in India have actually had a legacy of doing good for society even before we brought in the CSR law.
Right.
The law itself, when we finally brought it into the private sector as well from 2014, was something very particular to India. It was designed in India, for India, by India. Because there is something in India that we cherish about public service, about doing public good.
Yes.
The idea of bringing CSR as legislation was to get the private sector to use its resources and plug into the trajectory of inclusive development for the nation.
Right.
You could say that to benefit the poor or the marginalized or the helpless is the obligation of government.
Mm.
Madam Shalu Jindal and her husband and Jindal Steel can say, we are into profits because that's what we are here for. Mm. We pay taxes, which is the legitimate way to do it. The government takes those taxes. It is for government to look after the poor. Why are you straddling us with this burden? Mm. The answer here is not that at all. Idea of the law is, can we get private sector interested in social development, not to replace government, but to complement and supplement those efforts.
Right.
And bring in innovation, bring in their way of doing things, bringing the best minds on the board to say, how can we contribute equally
right.
to the national goal of development?
Right.
So to explain this more fully, the idea was that here both public and private sector now get the opportunity to participate with a percentage of their profits in the inclusive development of the nation. But coming back to your original question, what sets apart those who spend with passion, with real intent, and the drive that makes CSRs a real difference on the ground against those who see it more as a chore or as a responsibility to report? And there are organizations, and I have to say this genuinely for Jindal Steel, companies like that, who really take it as a mission, who believe in the fact that that spend that they are doing is not just about the money. It's about creating an atmosphere on the ground that brings communities to be with them. The drive they feel that, can we make a difference for our nation? Those who really feel that, those who have it in their system, they really are the ones who really drive the entire CSR ecosystem.
Right.
And of course, there are those who will continue to do what they need to do because
they have to do it. This have to do part, right? Just for the record, because we might have some young people who are part of the workforce who are tuned in. For their benefit, what is the number, that specified number that you need to commit to if you're a private or public enterprise?
So this is 2% of the average of your last 3 years' profits.
2%? The average of your last 3 years' profit. For the record, folks, bear that in mind.
That's the law.
But Shaluji, is that what you do?
So we actually at the Jindal Foundation, you know, it's one of the few foundations where we spend more than 2% of the mandatory requirement, you know, that needs to be spent.
Wow. So there you go. You're talking about passionate organizations, the kind that are driving bulk of the CSR value, I would imagine, social impact for the nation today.
People like this who actually don't remember what the 2% is.
Yeah.
They know that it is reported somewhere.
Yeah.
But because they are doing it, why would they suddenly stop?
Yeah.
They're driven by the fact that they need to make that difference. So often go to 2.1, 2.2, 2.3.
Lovely.
And, you know, they're not there to say, I've reached 1.199 and now I must stop because I've reached 2.
Yeah.
It's something that they're doing on an ongoing basis.
Yeah. You know, it's heartening, inspiring to hear that and to hear of the work, Shaluji, that you're doing at the foundation. But I'm sure, you know, a lot of times the intent is there. And the intent looks very active on paper. It's even throbbing with the promise of better tomorrow and everything. But on ground, the outcomes, that's a different story altogether. So I'm sure in your experience, Dr. Chatterjee, you've seen a disconnect sometimes inadvertently happen between intent and real impact. What would some of these be?
Well, obviously what happens is sometimes you start with good intent, you start with a project, you don't monitor it well enough, you don't document it well enough. The implementing agency or the NGO, which is actually doing the work in the field, because here, the way CSR is actually fashioned in the law,
right,
is that the corporate funds it, it monitors it, and it also assesses at the end the impact that's been left by it.
Right.
But they're not the ones who are actually working in the communities.
Right.
They're the implementing agency or the NGO, social organization, is actually doing the work.
Mm-hmm.
So unless you supervise them well, you track milestone-wise, you monitor the entire project, things can go pretty awry on the field pretty quickly.
Right.
If you're not involving communities well enough, if they don't feel interested in the CSR work that you are doing, then disconnect happens.
Mm.
And because we're all individuals, disconnects will happen. They may happen less frequently, but to say that they won't happen is, of course, a pipe dream.
Right.
So that's where these disconnects do occur. And when they do, it is for the organization and the implementing agency to sit together and say, all right, this is where we sort of missed the milestones or didn't do it well enough.
Hmm.
Let's see how we can now put it together again.
Yeah. So it's not really about visibility or optics. It's about long-term thinking, strategizing, digging your heels in.
But
right?
It is also about visibility and optics.
See.
Let's be fair.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, when you do CSR, there is something about also speaking about it, using it as brand value. It has to add to the business's brand value as well.
Right.
The company must feel invested in what they are doing, both financially, in terms of energy, in terms of passion. But end of the day, it's important for the company also to say in the public domain that this is what I have done.
Right.
And what's wrong with that?
Yeah, absolutely. And now that you've said it in that particular way, it makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah, I wanted to add something to what he just said, that, you know, at the Jindal Foundation, we usually don't work through NGOs. You know, we have our own team of CSR, you know, workers, and we go to the grassroots level with our own CSR teams, and we ensure that, you know, it's a 360 degree change that happens in the life of every, you know, person that we touch.
Wow.
Yes.
So let me say here, and Shaluji, with all regard to you, this is great, but this is one of the very few companies that do that. Mostly because it involves a lot of investment in manpower to have a whole army of people in CSR actually doing work for the company at the grassroots level. Almost 90% of the CSR landscape is driven by NGOs and civil society organizations who work on the ground.
Right.
But the law allows you to do it yourself also.
Hmm.
And because they have taken it so seriously, they feel propelled or motivated enough to do it through their own teams.
So, you know, Shaluji has just spoken about empowering or driving some of this transformative change with in-house teams, as I want to call it right now. And of course, there's room for partnerships, as you rightly pointed out as well. But I want to come to that question about young professionals who are looking at CSR as a career. A few years ago, you would have told me this and I'd say, really? I mean, are there people who really want a career in CSR? Or isn't this just one of those, you know, side functions? You know, I mean, you can't be blamed for thinking like that. But somehow, something tells me that on X nowadays, you have this whole dooms predictions happening, saying AI is going to change everything in 6 months. The jobs that you knew will not exist. Somehow, something tells me that CSR's time in the sun is here. I don't know.
Thank you. No, thank you for saying that. What can I say? When you create a field, as I did in that period, 2010 to 14, one of the first things you realize is you have created this field. Where are the professionals? Hmm. Like if you are the head of HR in a company and you want to recruit a finance professional, what are you going to say?
Right.
Chartered accountant, MBA finance. You want somebody, in HR itself. You look for an MBA in HR. Hmm. But if you're looking for a CSR person, now that it has become mandatory, as head of HR, where would you look? Hmm. There are no professionals.
Right.
So in the Indian Institute of Corporate Affairs, when I was its director general, right from 2011, I created the first certified professional course for CSR professionals. And the first batch came out, ma'am, in 2016.
Right.
And that's how now there are so many more certified CSR professional courses. But the one in the original and the government certified is still from there.
Yeah.
And that is why I'm happy to inform you that that batch has now come to one below board. Because CSR was a new field. People wanted lots of CSR professionals. So these people had first mover advantage. And they grew in their companies where they were recruited to this level.
Right.
That's why the need for professionals is so much today.
Right.
Let me also give you just a couple of numbers to illustrate this. When we began in 2014, the total national spend was around 8,000 to 9,000 crores.
Hmm.
Today it is 36,000 crores each year. By 2035, it will have passed 1,00,000 crores. So when we are there, that's the kind of exponential growth that CSR has had.
Right.
And the need for professionals today is really now growing at the same level.
Right.
Which is why when you find AI displacing so many software professionals, there's so much space here for them to come.
Absolutely.
Maybe not all of it.
Not all of them.
But a very attractive career awaits them here.
Yeah. And, you know, also I feel that the AI can never replace the human touch.
So,
you know, the feeling of empathy and, you know, the way when you go and work, you know, at the grassroots level with the tribal, you know, people, that what we do in the Jindal Foundation, because all our industries are in the tribal regions. So, you know, most communities that we work with are belonging to the tribal hinterland. So, you know, that it has to have a human touch. You know, you can't work with
artificial. Can you imagine her workers or the implementing agency work being replaced by AI robots? It's not going to work. That's it.
She's laughing.
So she's laughing because this is exactly the spirit, the soul of CSR is that humanity and the humane part of the individual.
Yeah. You know, I'm so glad this has come out today. Somehow I was wondering, every conversation nowadays has one special appearance, at least by AI, right? And it's happened over here. But luckily, AI is not the hero. The human is the hero over here, as Shaluji has rightly pointed out. And I wanted to ask you about when they say future ready in the context of vulnerable communities, right? We want to make this workforce ready to take on whatever, whether it's AI or not, we don't know. But what does that skilling look like, in your opinion, for this workforce?
I don't really know how the technological disruption will shape the world. But for the vulnerable communities, we must ensure basic human rights of food, shelter, and the livelihood. At least that's what I think.
Right. Yeah. You know, I think that's a very powerful, summary of the problem statement over here. And I'm sure as India approaches its 100th year of independence, and we've spoken about it in season one as well, Chaluji, the concept of India's 100 and what we can do as an organization to add to that vision, make it happen, really. How do you see CSR evolve in a way that makes it relevant or helps it stay relevant, responsible and impactful?
So I believe as India grows, we need more and more people and organizations to generously contribute for an equal society. We can't depend only on CSR. I think we ourselves have to come forward and, give back.
Right. Yeah. Putting the, I think, the power in the hands of the individual in many ways. And I see organizations like Jindal Steel as an individual in the larger universe of things. But Dr. Chatterjee, I've got to ask you, I have a similar question for you about the role of evolution of CSR. But before that, this is like asking a basic question right at the end of the story, but I'm here. Why must social impact be anchored in institutions and ecosystems? Why can't they just function as standalone projects? What's the benefit of institutionalizing social change?
Because institutions have power far beyond individuals. Hmm. Why do individuals come together to form institutions? Because by himself or herself, the individual is constrained by one's capacity, just one individual.
Right.
When people group together, band together, come together for a cause, whether it's a business cause or otherwise, then this brings strength to them.
Right.
Why do we call this corporate social responsibility? It is everybody's social responsibility, as Shalim Abim said at the very beginning, but why corporate? Because corporate has large-scale impact. Large corporates have huge volumes of funding. Because large volumes of funding and money also bring in a difference. Also, the finest minds of the country are in the boards of these companies. Mm. And therefore, the first line I wrote in the new law was that in the Companies Act, the CSR is board-driven. The CSR committee of the board is a committee of the board. It is that committee which puts up the budget, puts up the projects to be done, gets the approval of the board. All of this is board driven. Mm-hmm. That's why the institutional factor is so powerful.
Right.
About institutions, I would like to also, you know, contribute to what you said, Dr. Chatterjee, is that, you know, like, all our time is limited, you know, on in this world. So when institutions are made, it's like, you know, they're legacies that carry forward, you know, whatever the principles of the individual or the institution was. So it's so important to institutionalize everything.
That's such a beautiful thought.
It is.
We are constrained by our individual power and also by our individual lifetimes.
Yeah.
But institutions are
the outlet,
far beyond.
The outlet of human beings. Yeah. It's I think, a brilliant takeaway, one of the key takeaways of the entire show. The reason why this is, you said, we don't have to think about it as corporate social responsibility, but corporate also has value to play in social responsibility, and that you have underlined for us. Now, seeing as institutions and ecosystems are required to sustain this change, as you rightly pointed out, this next decade is going to be quite difficult, challenging, full of opportunity maybe, as we move towards India at 100. So to add to what Chaluji had said about how she wants to see CSR evolve, what would you say CSR should train its focus on?
In these 11 and odd years, CSR has gained a lot of momentum. With all due respect to the corporate sector, initially when the legislation was brought in, there was a lot of resistance on their part.
Right.
It took almost 3 or 4 years for them to say, all right, it's no more a challenge. It is now an opportunity.
Right.
Right. Now, that having happened and that momentum now having developed over these last 11 years or so, corporates are in a place where they are ready to take off. CSR itself is approached a takeoff stage. So what is CSR 2.0? And one of the two or three things we need to do is that innovation. We've done education, we've done health, we've done women's empowerment, we've done sports. A lot of it has been done. So now if we go into sports itself or into education, or what is the new thing we can do? So to me, CSR 2.0 must have as much innovation as possible.
Right.
Point one. Point two, we need to make sure that we track these projects better. The better we track them, the more results they will produce. And this is where AI comes in. The best tracking mechanisms are now available to us because of AI. We get real-time online data.
Yes.
If things are going to go wrong, you already know 2 months before that they are going to go wrong.
Yeah.
It's proactive. And the last part is about impact. So in the legislation about a year or two ago, we brought in a change in the rules, which said that any project which is more than the value of 1 crore must be externally evaluated.
Hmm.
That means it's not enough for Jindal Steel to say, we're doing a great job and our projects are great. But third-party evaluation must confirm that what we're doing is really something that we want to do, is impactful.
Right.
So impact evaluation is growing as a major field in CSR even as we speak.
Wonderful. I think it's a gold mine, a veritable gold mine of information is what you've given us. If you had to think and contemplate CSR, its impact, a career even in CSR. But if you're thinking that this sounds like she's wrapping up the show, no, I'm not ready yet because this is a rapid fire round and you go first, Shaluji. So quick questions, quick answers. All right, ready?
Ready.
All right. One word that describes leadership today.
Inclusion.
Okay. Okay, this is tough. Education, skilling, livelihoods. Which of these changes your destiny the fastest?
I think at Jindal Foundation, we believe it's education.
Education.
Yes.
Okay. Purpose. It's a very difficult word. A lot of people try to explain it. But one sentence to define purpose.
A safer and equitable world.
Ah, that's a great answer. So all three of them have come together very, very beautifully well. Inclusion, we are talking about education, and we are talking about a
safe
and inclusive world. And yes, absolutely. Superb. And that brings me to you. You've got some tougher questions coming your way because you confused me a bit over there. And, you know, you had me thinking a couple of times about, oh, what am I saying? So I'm going to make it hard for you. No, actually not.
Not to worry.
The one misconception you hear very often about CSR in India.
Is it just about money?
Okay. All right. Okay, this is the trick one. Compliance or conviction? Which one truly affects or drives change?
Conviction, without doubt.
Without doubt? But you said compliance is also important. Numbers are important. See, it's a rapid
fire. You won't get to compliance
okay.
if there's no conviction.
Mm. That makes
sense. Comes after conviction. Yeah. Compliance would come after conviction.
Now, see, people who are walking the talk, when they give me lessons, I have to quietly take them and carry on. Last question coming your way. If CSR gets everything right for the next 20 years, what does that India of 20 years from now really look like?
Closer to a developed society, as the Prime Minister's vision about Viksit Bharat is. So it's all-inclusive development driving us to a developed nation. CSR is one of the primary drivers to bring us towards the Viksit Bharat idea.
Yeah, yeah. You look like you were closing your eyes and imagining that India of your dreams, Shaluji. What do you imagine for India?
No, so I agree with Dr. Chatterjee that, you know, the Viksit Bharat, the dream that the present government has, it can happen.
Hmm.
But, you know, everybody has to get together.
Right.
You know, the public institutions, the private institutions, even personal, you know, the whole thought of for in giving we receive, you know, that thought process has to, you know, come forward.
Absolutely. Yes. Wonderful. And this truly is the end. And this is where I need to thank you, Shaluji, for not just sharing your vision and your ideas, your personal ideas, but those of Jindal Foundation as well. They serve as great examples. And you've, I think, told our listeners how the question that you should not be asking is, you know, how much to spend, but it's about how I can change somebody's life for the better. So that's been invaluable. And Dr. Chatterjee, all of the wisdom distilled from years of you being associated, creating indeed CSR and social impact for us. So very often this conversation can leave people with a cloud of more questions. And then you're like, oh my God, have I actually learned? But here you've helped us sift through the clutter and home in on the one single most important thing for CSR today, to remember that it is a national opportunity, one that helps you build capability and dignity, as Shaluji has mentioned, at scale in a country like India. And I would say that for our viewers, I hope you've got enough of examples of on-ground community development. You've also got a sense of the national vision and the aspiration and how that's completely aligned and in sync with the CSR framework as we understand it today. And I hope that helps you connect the dots between what you're doing in your CSR role. I'm hoping that you're one of them. And how the shared purpose or shared vision of India at 100 is coming to life with the work that you do. So a special shout out for all CSR professionals today. You also learned that real impact can only be derived if you strengthen capability, if you strengthen dignity and systems in a way that progress can really move forward. So it's been brilliant that you could, check into the very first episode of season 2 of the Steel of India podcast. We'll be back soon with more episodes, but thank you so much, Shaluji and Dr. Chatterjee, for joining us on the show today.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
And to our viewers, take care, not just of yourself, but the community that you serve as well.